And I'd like to call the call to order tonight's meeting, October 21st, 2020, of the Housing and Community Development Commission. Before we get started, I just want to inform everybody that tonight's meeting is being recorded and is streaming live on the City Channel. And I'd also like to thank Councilmember Pat Fowler for requesting this service for the public and for bringing greater attention and awareness for the work of the Housing and Community Development Commission. Commissioners, just a reminder that the mics are live, so if needed, please use the mute button. And tonight's meeting also includes a public hearing, so we're asking everybody to wear their mask and maintain social distancing. So, all right, first on the agenda, introductions. Diane, could you start us off? Oh, I'm sorry.
I just arrived.
Oh, sorry, you snuck in.
Diane Schuler.
Ross Kassman, Ward 3.
Terry Crouch, Member at Large.
Paul Watley, Ward 4.
Barbara Jefferson, Ward 1.
Mitch Ritter, Ward 2.
Randy Cole, City Staff.
Darcy Clark, City Staff.
Jake Amelunke, City Staff.
Thank you, everyone. I hope everybody has had a chance to read the agenda. Any discussion? If there is none, can I get a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve the agenda.
Second.
A motion has been made and seconded. All in favor, say aye.
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 Those opposed? We have an agenda. Next, we have the approval of the minutes. We actually have two meetings. We'll start with August 19th. Any discussion?
Yes, I'd like to make a motion for a correction on the August 19th minutes.
Okay.
I would like to have the statements that's in under the second presentation, which is on page 6. I'd like to have the second presentation, my statements, move to the first presentation statements. Do you need me to clear that up better for you? Do I need to say names or anything like that?
I think we're good.
Is that fine?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that is a motion. So is there a second, or do we need a second?
You could a motion to approve. Yeah, you need a motion to approve an amendment to the minutes.
Okay, do I hear a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
Second. A motion has been made and approved. Any discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? The motion carries.
And I think you need to approve the amendments the minutes as amended.
Yes.
Yeah. I'll make a motion to approve the minutes from both the August 19, which will be amended, and the August 26 meeting.
Second.
Okay, a motion has been made and seconded. Any discussion in regards to the August 26th meeting? No further discussion. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Those opposed? The minutes stand as written and amended. All right, next on the agenda, I'm going to turn this over to city staff to discuss the round 3 overview of the CDBG COVID-19.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Paul. So we've got another round of funding approved by HUD. So the city really appreciates all the work that the commission does on our annual funding processes. You all put a lot of work into that. And I know this year is pretty unique in having these additional funding rounds. And the work that you do is really critical to ensuring we're putting funds towards community priorities. So really the goal of tonight's meeting is to both relay all the information this commission needs to understand our process, also get feedback if you think we need to change or add parts to our process, ensure you understand the goals, and as well ensure that the community understands how much money there is allocated to us and what those funds go towards, and then also in turn hear from the public to make sure your all's recommendations to the council is driven by public input. So I'll start us off with the first slide. So we've been awarded $737,588. This is CDBG round three funds. Remember, the first round was $573,473 that we've been awarded, and those funds are being spent as we speak. Round two went directly to the state. So the state CDBG office is administering those funds. We haven't heard back on any process yet. And round three was awarded towards the end of September to us. It's different in how they decided those funding allocations. The first round was $2 billion at the national level. The third round was also $2 billion. The first round was allocated based on our formula allocation that relates directly to our annual formula based on population, poverty rates, and other kind of standard indicators like that. But round three was based upon our vulnerableness to the pandemic, which included an index scoring of elderly rates, childhood poverty rates, as well as COVID case counts per capita within our community. So you see, we received a little bit higher amount of funds on round three. So it indicates we're feeling, you know, an impact of the pandemic in our community. So these funds were through the CARES Act. Funds must be allocated to CDBG eligible activities. But then on top of that, there's another layer. They have to go towards activities that directly relate to preparing for, responding to, or addressing the impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic. So we can't, in summary, you can't fund projects that have kind of been hanging out there that, you know, somebody may have always wanted to do. It has to be directly related to the pandemic. But that's still, there's still a lot of flexibility and purview of what we can do with those funds, which is good. But this is how you spent or recommended the council spending the first round of funds, the 573. Did 270 to rent and mortgage assistance, 175 to the microenterprise program, additional 70,000 to homelessness, and then some admin funds. And those funds are being in process of being expended. So some of the HUD guidance we've received, a lot. This is a very short list of bullet points for what we've went through. So we have to make sure we're ensuring that we're hitting high priority needs. That's why we're starting off this process, getting feedback from the commission, getting feedback from the public, doing a survey, doing additional public engagement meetings virtually next week. So we need to do a lot to show we're hearing what the community needs are from the community. Also, they want us to identify procedures to allocate funds expediently. So we have to balance, you know, responding to the needs of the community in a quick fashion, but also ensuring we're getting enough input and doing enough thoughtful process that, you know, it's not haphazard, that it's strategic allocations. So we're kind of balancing those two things with this. We also have to have an awareness of what other funding sources are doing in our community. We've heard a lot of HUD guidance on not doing what they call a duplication of efforts. So basically, if a business has received PPP to cover all their costs for business interruption, we don't want to put funds on top of those costs or pay for the same benefit twice with the same amount of money. So that means we have to be really thoughtful in thinking about what other funds are coming into our community, but also as our staff, making sure we've got procedures in place to make the people that receive our assistance aware of that provision and aware that it's their responsibility to get us the information that shows they're spending funds appropriately. But it's been helpful with myself and my team involved in the Boone County Emergency Operations Plan. We've been working with the long-term recovery team coordinating the long-term recovery team, ESF 14. So we've been working with other community partners across the city and county to kind of look at what are ongoing needs. And we brought some of that information to the commission in the first round. Some of our own staff considerations. Again, these are going to be your all's recommendations that you take to council. Just a few things we wanted to offer up as considerations going forward. Ensuring the first thing was making sure we do larger bucket allocations versus a lot of small specialized allocations. Most communities our size with these sources of funds are doing between three to six or seven different activities. Anything beyond that, you know, the impact that you're making within that category becomes, you know, not as much. And then there's further risk of making sure we're not duplicating efforts with other funding sources in our community. There's just additional compliance thoughtfulness that we have to be mindful of. And the less activities we fund, the less administration requirements we might have, and the more funds we could put towards projects versus hiring more staff to oversee, you know, a multitude of contracts doing a lot of different types of activities. But certainly, you know, if you all, you know, see six priorities that you want to fund, or and there's a seventh one and you need to do it, you know, we'll support you. Just something to be mindful of that was on our minds. So how did we spend funding so far? I have in this slide kind of the whole picture, because we had a round one CDBG CV, or our CARES Act funds, $573,473, but we also reallocated some 2019 funds and then amended some of our 2020 funds for a couple different programs. So really we've put more money towards response beyond just the CDBG and home dollars, or beyond just the CDBG CARES Act dollars. We included some of our annual CDBG and home allocations. So this is just for your information. So most of what we've been doing is, you know, funding housing and homelessness efforts and then assistance to small businesses. In total, about $1.3 million. So that's something to be proud of getting some a good level of resources out to our community that people are expending at the moment and helping people. Just a couple more slides. So the National Community Development Association, it's a nonprofit entity that does education and advocacy efforts for people in our positions across the country, and also provides, you know, policy guidance to HUD at times when requested. They did a survey of 103 different cities and I think 38 states across the country. Asked them how are they expending CDBG CARES Act dollars, so funds that, you know, we're talking about tonight. A majority of cities, 83 of 103 that responded, were spending on rent, mortgage, and utility assistance. Food security, that's not something we funded in the last round, but 55. Other public services, and that was a pretty broad category. There's a long list of items that I included in the staff memo. It includes anything from health, mental health, and workforce training, you know, 51. Assistance to small businesses was another high one. Public facilities were a little lower down the list, as well as acquisition or leasing a property for homelessness. And I think, you know, you may wonder why is that. I think a lot of it is many cities have been trying to keep people from becoming homeless and focusing on the rent assistance and those types of activities, and then doing just additional operational support to nonprofits that are assisting with homelessness efforts, helping them staff up to handle additional space. But we were one of the two that had allocated funds to lease space in our round one. So we had a meeting with that ESF 14 group. It's about 16 people, everyone from Columbia Public Schools to the Chamber to Ready, a lot of different community partners. Themes we heard in those groups as we've been meeting: rent and mortgage assistance, also assistance to nonprofits. A lot of nonprofits have received funds from us in town. You know, we've got VAC, the Housing Authority, and then there's other federal sources coming into our community, a lot going to CMCA for utility assistance, Head Start. There's additional County CARES Act funds going out in organizations. So a lot of organizations have funds to help, you know, people in need. But I also think a lot of organizations are feeling kind of bottlenecked with staffing, you know, needing additional staffing support. So that's something we've been hearing at the ground level. Also transitional housing for homeless families, additional support for homeless individuals or unsheltered populations. That seems to be something on a lot of the forefront. Workforce training and then internet access especially was talked about a lot when there was, you know, before the kids have gone back to school. And there's probably still some uncertainty with that in the future, I would imagine. So I would think that's another need going forward. Couple more slides. This was in your memo. This is our process, our proposed process, if the commission is good with taking this route. This is much more compressed than our annual allocation process that might take anywhere between 6 to 7, 8, or 9 months. But, you know, this is within a period of 3 months, it gets to council under this scenario. So we're on the October 21st, so tonight's kind of our broad public hearing to start just getting a lot of ideas. Also get approval of the survey to send out that I'll talk about in a bit. The next Wednesday and Thursday, we've got some local volunteers that have graciously agreed to help us with doing some Zoom public engagement meetings. So if people aren't comfortable coming to in person, we can do it online. I know Diane and Paul have volunteered to help with that. I haven't heard back from Diane, but I got you on the list anyhow. And then November 18th, hopefully, the hope is at that meeting we would have a good amount of survey data, information we've gotten from tonight, that we can start, you know, wrapping our minds around what do we think we want to fund, what should we include in an RFP of priorities that we want to request the community to come and present proposals for utilizing these funds. I was going to do an additional council report on December 7th just to provide them an update, just to make sure they know where this commission's at and if they're, you know, having any priorities or considerations that they want the commission to think about, that opportunity's there. And then the hope would be at that December 16th meeting, we would have proposals back. That's a pretty quick turnaround for you all to look at, consider, think about. And if you're in a position to decide, hopefully you would. And then have something go to City Council on January 4th to approve as what we would have our amendment to our plan that would incorporate, you know, all the plans for how we'd spend this $737,588. And then we'd submit that plan to HUD. And then, you know, we think it would take 30 days for them to turn around. Could be less, could be more. You know, we kind of wait on them at times. And then depending on the level of environmental review per project, projects would start with, after agreements go before council, either the 1st of March, April, or May. So there's different environmental review requirements that we do, some of which require us to spend money on engineering costs, like a phase one environmental site assessment or a noise analysis. Additional inspection about lead or asbestos. So if we're doing any kind of rehab to a property, we'll have to do a really in-depth environmental review. If it's just something like rent assistance, there's less review. So different priorities that we come up with that you recommend to council in January, some might move forward more quickly than others, depending on the environmental regulations that pertain to that specific project. So that just gives you a layout. Hopefully that gives you a good picture of what it could look like in terms of timeline. Now, if you need an additional meeting in there, as we go through this, I think we need to be flexible, and you guys can, you know, just say that, and we'll take another meeting and push it back. But this is what I came up with so far. But yeah, the purpose of tonight's hearing that's coming up in a bit, would be just to get public input for this round of funding to help us prevent, prepare, and respond to the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic, help guide your RFP process, make sure what you fund is aligned with what the community and the public thinks are our priority needs. But I think that's kind of our standard way of operating, so hopefully that all incorporates what you think would be a good process. I'll take any questions or comments.
Randy, you have one comment. The one number in the third paragraph stands out, that nearly 18 million of funds that are in the hands of the state. When are we likely to see, you know, allocations from that? Because it's my understanding, if it isn't allocated, it goes back to the federal government.
Yeah, you know, most federal programs do have timelines, and you know, if people aren't using it, you know, that's problematic. So that $17 million are funds that were allocated directly to the state, so not to the city. But under the CARES Act, the city could apply for those funds to the state once they've come up with a process and what their priorities would be, similar to the plan that we're going through, but at the state level. But I have not heard of any process yet. I've been in contact with their office several times over the last 6 to 9 months or whenever this thing started back in March. But we have not heard of any process indicated yet. But once they release it, we would want to, you know, see if that's something we could get into our community as well, because certainly the needs are growing.
And is that the same parallel with the money that is being held in Boone County?
So that's a different pot of funds. The funds of the county, the $21.7 million, I assume you're talking about.
Yes.
Those are directly from the U.S. Treasury that went out to some quote-unquote entitlement communities that met the threshold. I think it's $500,000, if I'm correct. So cities like St. Louis could have got that directly. Maybe Kansas City. I can't remember what their population's at. But for areas under that threshold, those funds went directly out to the county. And I believe they got those in May. The city has applied for some additional funds for small business assistance and microenterprise program funding, but we have not heard back any feedback yet. But that would be something to consider moving forward. Hopefully we have information on that before our next meeting. Those funds have to be expended by December 31st, so that's a really tight time frame. We'll see, you know, if they get that
looking
money out
at the time frame that we spaced out with to try and allocate the funds that we've already have.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be extremely difficult if we don't get access to whatever funds may be coming our way in the very near future.
Yeah, I would agree. And having those funds come out so late makes it more difficult for us to be strategic about how we utilize our funds. And we are moving forward quickly, like we did on our first round. But yeah, it does make things a little complicated, but we'll have to manage through that.
Mm. Feedback and assessment loops have you built into this process to, what sort of feedback and assessment loops do you have built into the process? So you know that the dollars are being spent the way they're supposed to, and it's an effective use, and so that then you can look at how much need there is going forward.
So anyone we fund, like say VAC or the Housing Authority, we have an agreement that stipulates exactly how they can spend the funds and how they can't spend the funds. And then we have monthly reporting requirements. Most agencies want to draw down funds monthly. So I've worked with VAC's staff. They've been very proactive in reaching out, and we've come up with criteria that we want them to report on. So we'll have a pretty tight handle, especially on our microenterprise recovery loan program and small business recovery loan program. We can tell you real time how much money's being allocated, where it's at in the process, what type of businesses, how many employees they have. So we have really good processes for knowing where we're at on expenditures. Tonight's really about making sure we have a good process to get feedback from the public, information to the commission, to make sure we can make good, sound recommendations going forward. I noticed I did have one more slide, Paul, I wanted to cover. Would it be all right if I covered that real quick?
Yep, let's do that.
Wanted to make sure, I should call you Chairperson Whatley, sorry. Next week, we have a virtual public engagement meeting October 28th and 29th in the evenings. We have two options on Wednesday and three on Thursday. A link is out. People are signing up. So that's really good, really exciting to see. We've got 5 volunteer facilitators from our community that have helped us on our consolidated planning process, and that's very helpful. And so hopefully at those meetings would be another opportunity if people didn't feel comfortable showing up tonight. We could just get some more informal feedback for what the community thinks our priorities are, and we'll bring that information back to the commission. And then we have our survey. It's similar to the April and May survey, but we did add a few questions just because it's a different time now than it was then, and we've just been hearing feedback through ESF 14 and just interacting with other folks in the community. So we added questions about internet access being a priority so people could rate that, and then workforce training as well, and homelessness. Before, I think workforce training was wrapped within the question, so we added those. So hopefully the commission has had a chance to review that. I did have one error I wanted to note. Ward 1, we had Ruffin's name. That needs to be updated to Fowler, so we'll get that updated. I apologize for that. But other than that, yeah, that's everything I had to present tonight.
On the Zoom meetings, will we also be able to get in on those Zoom meetings?
Absolutely.
To listen?
Yeah.
So we will get the link on how to do that?
Absolutely. We love commissioners to attend those meetings.
I have a question on the survey, and I think it has to do just with the federal definitions and census as to when you ask for somebody to state their race or ethnicity. I noticed there was no Hispanic or Latino choice there, but then I was trying to look. I tried to kind of do some research on that, and I guess there's really not a choice with the.
So we,
Question number 10.
That's question number 10. So ethnicity is separate from race as HUD classifies it and most.
Oh, I didn't see that. Okay. I didn't see what the other ones. Okay.
That's all right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of at the bottom, isn't it?
Yeah. That one's question 10.
Okay,
you know, I also wanted to add, we had some feedback from a community member, Tracy Griever Rice, that was very helpful. She works at the university, does a lot of support with surveys and nonprofits around the community, just a helpful individual. And she made the point, and we updated our language. Some of it was a little bit gender bias. We went off of what HUD's language was. It was about having a head of household. So we changed and updated that language to be more inclusive and called it a one income earner. So we're thankful of her input there.
Randy, going back to the NCDA survey and the respondents who replied,
mm-hmm.
I actually did make a note under food security because that's a pretty good respondent rate, you know, for food for the homeless and the elderly. And with my time on the commission, I don't think we've ever discussed any food security ever. And I'm wondering if this is something that we may add to the survey or actually bring up during the Zoom meeting. Just yeah. To make sure we cover our bases.
Yeah, I'd be happy to add that question. Food security, that'd be great. You know, I did have Pam from the food bank reach out. I think she's here tonight. Yeah. She reached out and said, you know, they have needs and is there any opportunity for input? So
okay.
Connected her tonight. I'd be happy to, I'd be happy to add a question on food security.
Thank you,
Randy. We just put it maybe right after number 8. Does that work?
Before 8 or after 8?
Make it number 8.
Or I guess make it number 8, excuse
yeah.
me.
Yeah.
I mean after number 7. Would that I did try to kind of group them together in ways that I thought made sense. I could put it more up towards number 2 or 3, because it seems kind of related to households, you know, monthly needs. That might make more sense.
Maybe make it number 3 or number 4.
Okay. How about number 3?
That'll work.
Okay. We'll make that update. Our plan, unless there's any other amendments to it, is we'd want to release it tomorrow so we can start getting feedback as soon as possible.
Yeah, what's the next meeting's on 11/18? What's the survey deadline?
You know, my thought is I think we should keep it open through that next meeting in December. I think you'll have some survey data that's meaningful by that November 18th meeting. You know, if we're 150, 200 responses by then, I think that would be meaningful, but we could keep it open through to that December meeting. Just if there's any changes, you'll have that information then.
Just a quick question about the division in terms of funding. And I know the funding for CDBG is very different from that, say, for human services. But can some of these funds be used, like, for what would be normally human services, like the child care facility or child care and the food bank, which I know is something human services funds are? Can money be spent in different ways like that?
It most certainly can. We just need to make sure, you know, there's that duplication of effort issue. You know, if human services is providing some funds to child care, I'd want to make sure we're not, you know, double funding something, or we'd want to look at what's the need and how much of the need are they hitting. And if the need is way beyond what they're hitting and our funds could help, that could be a good use of funds.
And does that include, like, money being spent by the school district? I know there's an idea for internet access, but tutoring for school-age children or anything like that, is that part of it, or is there a separation between schools?
As long as they're providing a public service like tutoring, I don't know of any other cities doing that with these funds. I could look into it. As long as they're serving low to moderate income children, that likely we'd use free and reduced lunch, that would be eligible. But now that I say that and think about it, you'd want to make sure you can relate that to the pandemic. Maybe, I guess, tutoring for children that are, you know, at home and need that additional assistance or something. I don't know. I'd have to think about how we could. What you want to do is be able to directly go from A to B on relating it to the pandemic, especially when we're going to get audited. You know, I've been through the stimulus package back in 2008, and we had a lot of very thorough digging in and looking at how you spent the funds. Did it fall right in line? And I would anticipate that coming about next year. So when we're thinking through funding decisions for staff, it works really well when you don't have to over-explain how you can relate what you're doing to the regulations. If you can say, yep, we can relate this to the pandemic, you know, you don't have to convince an auditor. It's very clear. That's very helpful.
Okay, any other questions for Randy? It seems like we transitioned to the survey already. So,
yeah.
But that is next on the agenda. Has everybody had a chance to review the survey? And if so, any questions or comments? So right now we're going to have the addition of food security added to the need survey, and then we're going to make a change for the ward that we live in from Ruffin to Fowler. And so with that in mind, can I get a motion to approve the need survey as amended as discussed?
So moved.
There's a motion on the floor. Is there a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? The motion carries. Okay, next on the agenda is the public hearings. And I do want to remind the members of the public, when you come up to the podium to present your comments to the commission, please wear your mask. And then when you're done, If you can wipe down the podium area with the Lysol wipe right there on the podium, right next to the podium on the left side. And the time limit will be 5 minutes. And Mitch, do you mind? Will you be our timekeeper? Okay, we're ready for the public hearing.
Nick Foster, Voluntary Action Center, VAC. First, I want to say that we're grateful for the funding we received in the last round, and we're using it. To give you a little bit of an update, we've spent around $30,000 of that money already, but not all of that. We've spent around $30,000 within the CDBG funding, but within the CDBG program. Some of that funding has been supplemented by funding we received also through the state, through the DED granting process. And so we've just put that alongside the funding that we got from CDBG. So already you're leveraging other funds in that way. But that being said, I think it's important to note that one of the real struggles that we're all having, certainly in agencies, and I think it's your struggle too, is determining what's going to be the best use of this money right away and in an ongoing fashion. And how do you do that in concert with other funds that are becoming available? For instance, ESG CARES Act, ESG CARES money is available now, that they're accepting applications at the state for that money. In the first round of that, they have $9 million for the state, but there's an additional $18 million that will become available down the road a piece. They've broadened the guidelines for that. So for instance, the income levels are higher than they would be. Things like matching are waived, and a lot of other things I won't go into detail about. One of the struggles we're having at VAC, and we will apply, is how much do we apply for? And then there is the issue of having staff to manage those funds as well. So I think that's true about everything that we're seeing. We made application for funding from the state through the CARES money there, but you have to cover expenses only through November 16. So we got a whole lot of money that we're struggling really hard to go ahead and spend. This is one reason we put that money alongside the CDBG funding. And we're using the person that is being paid for through CDBG to manage that, so it extends the value of that investment. But because of the time frames in which a lot of these monies are allowed to be spent and so forth, it does challenge everybody who gets that money. So that's going to be an issue ongoing. Now, ESG CARES, there's a long time frame for that. You spend money through August of 2022. And it's available for other things like emergency shelter, which is not a part of the ESG process. I'd say that really in terms of what you're looking at now, all of these things that have been mentioned as possibilities for things you can fund are worthy. It'll be a challenge for you to narrow down in the way that Randy has recommended, or staff is recommending that you do, but I think that's smart. But a lot of what we're finding with rent assistance, mortgage assistance, and so forth is we're just trying to keep people whole for a while longer. And I don't think that's going to change for a good period of time, and I'm out of time here. But I think that's one of all of these needs that you're hearing and you're seeing, those are going to continue to be there for a good long period of time. So any information that we can provide to help you in making that decision and your other decisions, we're more than happy to share our experience so far. We're trying to learn from what we're doing already so that it can inform what we'll do in the future as well.
Thank you, Mr. Foster.
Can we ask questions at all? Or?
You can ask your chairperson.
Do we have a question for Mr. Foster?
I did have one. Nick, as far as what you're seeing, do you have like a steady client base that you're funding, say, month after month after month for rent assistance? Or do you have that base plus an influx of additional people who are coming in for rental and utilities?
Everything we're doing currently with the CDBG funding and these other new funds are for new clients. We have some monies already that are used for instance, Missouri Housing Trust Fund, MOHIP, which won't be available to us in the next round, ESG. So we're using those in the same programmatic ways in which we've been using them all along. So these are new new monies, and so really mostly new clients. Now, we have a policy that will only provide so much assistance over a 36-month period. We've been looking at that, and we've already made a couple of adjustments to that, but it does limit how much people can receive. But we anticipate also that a number of people that are coming into the program for this will need multiple months of rent, and we're reviewing that on a monthly basis. But the likelihood is that many of the people we're bringing in will provide for a number of months. There's a six-month limit, I think, Randy, on that altogether. But as we bring new people in, we'll be also serving the people we've already brought in. So the folks that we've served in this first month or so that we've been identifying folks, we'll serve some of them at least for a period of time, and then we'll add other people along. So there'll be a buildup of those clients over time, and the expenditure should increase over time for that reason.
Mr. Foster, are they mainly just coming in for rent assistance, or is there other reasons also?
Well, you mean like mortgage assistance?
No, it's for other reasons other than
a lot of the people, one of the things that's good about what we do is that we provide a lot of other services alongside rent assistance. So we're helping people with medical expenses, with household cleaning supplies, with gas for getting to work, a new ID, so forth. So we're continuing to provide those services at the same time, but a number of the people who receive housing services from us also receive some of these services. They're funded outside the CDBG grant. Does that answer your question?
I was just trying to get an understanding of how COVID-wise,
mm-hmm.
will you be giving additional type of aid to? I mean, I heard you say that you would use it for rent, and I understand that mm-hmm. part for COVID. But, and you're saying what other things are they getting the money for that pertains to COVID?
Well, not from CDBG in particular, but really what I'm talking about now is just a continuation of services we already provide.
I understand the services.
So they wouldn't necessarily be related to COVID, but I'm sure that a lot of the people we're serving now have been impacted in that way. It'd be hard to imagine that that's not true. Though it's not necessarily true that if they're in for certain services that we ask them for a COVID relationship.
Thank you.
Sure.
Any other questions for Nick? Thank you, sir.
And I will wipe the area.
Hello, everyone. I'm Debbie Graham. I'm the president of the Columbia Interfaith Resource Center Board, and we operate Room at the Inn, which is an emergency winter shelter. And I do want to thank you for the support that you offered us in the first round, and we are already working on putting that to good use. We have identified a property, an old hotel that we think will serve us very well as an isolation and quarantine shelter, plus a place where we can isolate some of our guests who may be older or have underlying medical conditions who would be more at risk for COVID. We have identified a church who is making their entire facility available to us for our entire season, which that is such a gift. We're going to be opening on December 13th is our plan, closing on March 14th, unless there's some inclement weather on the way, but that's the plan for now. So with the hotel and with the church, we will have a minimum of 60 beds. We also have another church partner who has agreed to serve as an overflow shelter because we occasionally have a snowpocalypse here in Columbia. and or temperatures that will get into the negatives during the evening. So when we have weather like that, we tend to stay open for extended periods outside of our 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. time frame. So this church has agreed to be our kind of our overflow space where we can put 16 more individuals if we need to protect them from the cold. And I'm being very honest when I tell you that we would never have been able to provide the isolation space and the at-risk space without the money that the funding that you all were gracious enough to gift us with last time. And we're just about at the point where we have met all of the HUD requirements to have access to those funds, and the owner of the hotel is being very nice and waiting on us to finish dotting all the I's and crossing all the T's, and then getting going on figuring out exactly what we're going to do in terms of staffing. We know we're going to be hiring more folks. We're probably going to be at least doubling our staff, if not more. I think I said last time that I was here that many of our volunteers are retired people, and of course they're most at risk for COVID. So we are anticipating a reduction in our volunteers, but we're trying to plan for that with funding from other sources and possibly funding that would become available later. So thank you. We're our 13th winter as a temporary shelter.
Any questions? Comments?
Thank you for what you do.
Well, we're glad to do it, and hopeful that one day we won't have to.
Can I ask just a little bit on your management of that? How do you make these decisions? Okay, you need to go to this facility or not, you know, risk,
well,
et cetera.
I think we're still formulating that procedure because this is really new to us as well. And I think for the at-risk rooms, we're going to be asking for referrals from other social service agencies because we think everyone's going to want to be in the hotel room, and I can't blame them. I mean, it's a room to yourself with a shower and a TV, and why wouldn't you want that rather than sleeping on a cot? The isolation and quarantine rooms will probably take, we'll be getting information, I'm sure, from health department, and we'll be doing our own screenings every night with temperature screenings and asking the COVID questions that we're all getting so used to answering lately. But we'll be doing that every night as a part of our check-in procedure. So if someone is running a fever for a reason that we can't identify, we'll probably go ahead and send them to isolation until we can get a COVID test. Anybody else got a question?
About those COVID tests, how are you getting those?
We're going to have to work closely with the health department in the city to get access. We'll probably just send them with a referral over to the health department to get one. I doubt that we will have access to them at the shelter just because we really don't do any medical stuff. Usually when we have a medical, what we perceive as a medical emergency, we just call 911 just like anyone else would. So we will just work with the health department to get them a test, but we'll put them in a room by themselves just to make sure until we know for sure.
Any other questions or comments? Thank you, Ms. Graham. I'm glad to hear that the monies are going to good use.
Couldn't do it without you, quite literally.
Reverend Brad Bryan, pastor of Wilkes Boulevard United Methodist Church, executive director of Turning Point Day Center. Debbie really just teed me up. Room at the Inn and Turning Point work very, very closely together throughout the season. When they show up
from room at the end to turning point in the morning. They will again get their temperature checked and all the questions. And we do have testing. We have had testing three times on site throughout the 7 months. The health department just sends MU Health our way. And we do it for First Ward, for Wilkes and 7th, and for the unsheltered community right there at Wilkes Church. So I guess I'm speaking directly and specifically to homelessness and our addressing the homelessness concerns. The pandemic has proven that our amazing services have reached their capacity. And our population has outgrown their capacity. We have absolutely no way of effectively and efficiently isolating and quarantining and social distancing our unsheltered neighbors. And so we're working on the development of something bigger and a permanent opportunity center for unsheltered and sheltered homeless individuals, and we hope to be one of those large buckets that we get in and under the umbrella of homelessness, because this has really shown that in response to this and in preparation for the next one, Turning Point has been outside for 7 months. Loaves and Fishes has been serving outside for 7 months. The soup kitchen that serves out of Wilkes Boulevard, United Methodist Church, we can't do that through the winter. So we have to figure something out there again, working closely with Ratty and all that stuff. We are just not prepared to respond to something like this in our homelessness services community, even with all of the amazing work that our folks are doing. So we hope and I guess I'm speaking on behalf of a population that's probably not going to respond to a survey all that much, hop on a Zoom call. So I hope to be one of the large buckets, I'm representing a coalition through facilitated by Faith Voices of Columbia. That's just the facilitation committee, bringing people, the social service providers, to the table, to really throwing our energy behind an opportunity center for unsheltered Columbians and Boone Countyans, that has the services that we do at Turning Point and Loaves and Fishes and Room at the Inn. Just in a center, in a one location that has energy and funding and staffing and resources behind it, and we can really move towards ending homelessness in Columbia, Missouri. I agree with all of the priorities that we've talked about today. I just hope that we can be one of those large buckets that y'all recommend, because right now we do not have the physical capacity to isolate, quarantine, social distance, and provide the opportunities for our unsheltered neighbors to stay safe. And we can, and I think we should.
Any questions for Brad or comments?
Are you with your coalition and, you know, realizing again that these funds have to be related to COVID, and you state definitely how that can be related to COVID, but would that be something that your group would be working on as far as a proposal then to clearly show that?
This is something that I've been passionate about in general, but in response to the pandemic, it has become clear that our model is insufficient. And that we could take advantage of some of these funds, in the 6 months next start of next summer, when we would get our hands on them, to really start making sure that the isolation and the quarantining and the testing and the and all of the health stuff is in place for our unsheltered neighbors. So our team is currently working on specifically addressing a response to the pandemic of COVID-19 in terms of we need a homelessness shelter, right?
Have you looked at any potential locations?
I look at locations on the daily basis. all over town. So I think we're about... I want to do this right this time. I want to do this permanently this time. I want to be up and running and self-sustaining, which means I'm playing a slower game than we have played in the past. So any locations that's available right now is probably not going to be available when we're ready to go forward. I want to be clear that I'm not talking about the corner of Wilkes and 7th in the first ward. that I'm talking about, we're looking at Business Loop location. We're looking at North Range Line location, just sort of general areas, but not specific buildings other than the ones I drive by every day and say, "Hey, that would be a good shelter." because it would be inefficient to pick out a building for sale today and say and go after that because we don't have the funds to do that. But my eyes are always open. So it's more areas of town now.
Any other questions? Thank you, Reverend Bryant.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Jane Williams, and this is Kelly Van Doren, and we're from Love, Inc. of Columbia. I'm totally blind, so hopefully I'm staring at someone. I met with Randy last week, a couple of us did, and he encouraged us to come to this meeting and just share what we've been doing, particularly during this pandemic, to respond to homelessness that you may be interested, and then share a little bit about potential expansion of what some of that is. Love, Inc. has been here for 12 years in Columbia, and we work with anyone who is unable to cover their basic expenses and wants to create a path towards sustainability. That's a lot of people who are in crisis and transition. We serve about 1,100 typically unduplicated adults during the year, and this year we're going to exceed that. But what I wanted to share primarily, and this is Kelly, who works with our money management program, but also our extra mile transition home program. We have 6 transition homes, which we provide housing for 4 to 6 months for homeless families in just kind of almost an ICU setting to help them get back on their feet from being homeless. This is only families with children because there's so few spaces available. Even the Harbor House has only 6 family rooms. You may be aware of that, with 4 beds each. That has not been available for most of the pandemic due to quarantining. So there's very limited space for families with children who are homeless. Room at the Inn is a marvelous, does a marvelous job. Turning Point does a marvelous job. The part that we have had primarily is working with the families with kids. Back to our transitional housing program, we've graduated around 30 families. Is that it, Kelly, something about that? And we have really every family has transitioned to a sustainable lifestyle and permanent housing, and we've had great success. So we think it's a great model with the wraparound services, and we would like to expand that with the purchase of more homes. We have 5 of our homes are lent to us by either local individuals or a local church. We own one of them, but it's a model that's working, and we would like to see that expanded. But just to tell you a little bit about what we've been experiencing since COVID, last year in 2019, we worked with 65 homeless households, I would say. That's mostly families with children or adults who are homeless. Primarily, we would work with those with disabilities or the elderly. This year, we have already worked with 186 households. And it started in when the shutdown came and families were just literally being pushed to the curb. These were a lot of families that were staying in pay-by-the-week hotels. Their employers shut down. They could not pay any longer. And immediately, we had 20 to 25 families in hotels that we were getting calls about. And we have continued to have probably, how many do we have now today, Kelly?
18.
These are 12 families with kids, more than that, 15 families, most all families with kids, a couple are, again, elderly and disabled. And we are using Como Helps money. We have had $35,000 from the Como Helps group, which we've been very grateful for, private donations to do this. And we have recently received the CARES Act money from DED through the Nonprofit Relief and Recovery that Nick referred to. But this all has to be spent by November 15th. And we're struggling as a small organization even to be able to just administer that. So after November 15th, we'll probably still have 18 or 20 families in the hotels. We aren't sure quite how we're going to fund that and what we're going to do to help them. But Room at the Inn won't be opening, as you just heard, until December 15th. The car camp closes, I guess, the 24th. there's just a great need. So we're here to talk about the great need and to really make a pitch for families with children who don't often do so well in shelters. If you have disabled children, just various needs, it's very difficult to be in a shelter with children. We've had probably at least six families with five children each, and that's a lot in a hotel room and certainly a lot in a shelter. So we would like to be considered for expanding our transitional housing program, which we think has been very successful, even toying with maybe some partnerships with the Community Land Trust. So that's what we'd have to say. We'd love to answer questions.
Any questions or comments?
How did you say you would use the money? You're wanting money to help get more homes?
You know, honestly, we haven't thought this through a lot. I had this conversation last week with Randy, and we would like to expand. We have six at the moment. We would like to have more homes. I'm not planning to build, we aren't planning to build a homeless shelter. We're going to leave that to Brad. But that's the piece we have. And I just thought even just hearing from us and hearing what we're experiencing and the number of homeless families with children, many of whom, as I said, they were in pay-by-the-week hotels already. They couldn't stay there. There just is so little shelter opportunity. Doubled up with families, just wasn't working during COVID and with kids out of school. So we're just here to let you know about this, tell you we'd like to expand this program. We have an opportunity to buy a couple of houses coming up, and we just wanted to bring this out.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Thank you, Jane. Thank you, Kelly. Any other comments from the public? Okay, seeing none. Any general comments by the public? Commissioners or staff?
I would say I got one comment, just replug in the virtual Zoom public engagement meetings next week. Be great to have commissioners on, and if you have the ability to help get the word out about that through, you know, your email lists, we'd really appreciate help with that as well. Also, when we send the survey out, we'll forward that along to the commissioners too, and if you can help spread that to your email circles and all of your circles, we need all hands on deck helping get information out.
Likewise. Okay, the next meeting date, I believe we said it was November 18th.
Yep.
at 7 o'clock. Location to be determined, or is it still going to be in here?
We're going to do it right in here. We feel we can socially distance the best in this room, so.
I already reserved the space.
Yep.
All right, perfect. I'd like to thank the members of the public and the community who came out tonight. Thank you for everybody who actually commented and gave us some insight on how your organizations work and giving us a little bit of what your needs are. Thank you, commissioners and city staff. So with that in mind, we are at the adjournment. Do I hear a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
A motion has been made and seconded. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Good night, everybody. Ooh.